You are listening to BensTorah.com.
Malpractice, malpractice in halacha. Halacha doesn't have that word, malpractice, but there are several intersecting halachic discussions which discuss what we would call today malpractice. It's helpful to group the discussion into three parts, to break it down into three parts. There is what I would call blue-collar malpractice, white-collar malpractice, and medical malpractice. Blue-collar malpractice is an artisan, someone who works with his hands, an auto mechanic, a bricklayer, an HVAC technician, who comes in, does some work, and breaks something while he does it. We had a case in Bayston a while back where a mechanic was working on a car. He's supposed to replace a part, fix a part. When he returned the car, something substantial was broken. It wasn't clear exactly what happened, but while he was working on it, something broke in the car. The customer wanted the mechanic to pay for it. That's what I would call blue-collar malpractice, malpractice involving someone working with his hands. That's an example of that. There is white-collar malpractice, what we might call legal malpractice, financial professional malpractice, malpractice of someone whose work is with words, with his brain, with his mouth, and his work, so to speak, is giving advice and giving recommendations and performing white-collar work. And he makes an error which causes his customer, his client, some kind of loss. One concrete example of that we'll return to later again is in the Tshuvas Chavetzelis HaSharon of Rabbi David Menachem Mannes Babad. He talks about a case of a customer who was purchasing a used Sefer Torah, secondhand market. Before purchasing it, he did what a prudent customer would do. He showed it to a sofer and said, "Is this in good condition? Is this worth buying?" And the sofer said, "Yeah, it needs a little work, but it's not that expensive. We can fix it at minimal cost." He bought the Sefer Torah, and then when they got down to repairing it, they saw the damage was much worse. A lot of it had to be rewritten, and it was not fixable in a cost-effective way. So the question was, A, mekachtos, can he get his money back from the seller? And B, if that's not an option, if the seller's gone, the seller doesn't have the money, whatever it is, can he sue the sofer for giving him bad advice? Malpractice. I asked your professional opinion. You gave me a bad opinion, and of course, I'm out money because of you. That is what I would call white-collar malpractice. The third case we'll discuss, which perhaps is the most familiar, and the ones you read about a lot, is medical malpractice. A physician who makes some kind of error and thereby causes harm to his patient. There are many examples of this. Just to mention a few that maybe we'll touch on later, a few that come up in the halakhic literature. Rav Yosef Fleischman talks about a case of a baby who was born with severe brain damage, and the physician, the OBGYN, who delivered the baby, eventually admitted to the parents that he had been negligent, he had done something wrong during the delivery, which resulted in the damage to the infant. Rav Asher Weiss talks about a case of a GI doctor of some sort, who someone came to him with severe pain, and he referred him to scans for testing, but he didn't mark it as urgent, and it took days before they would see him because he didn't mark stat or urgent or whatever they mark on the order. And in the meantime, his condition got worse. By the time they finally treated him, he had to have part of his intestines removed and had the doctor behave properly. Had he caught it properly? Had he marked it right on? Had he done it with dispatch? The patient would have been better off. There, Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein talks about a case, again, of an OBGYN who the baby was in fetal distress. The question was, should they do an emergency delivery, a forceps or a C-section or something? And the doctor said, no, let it go. He apparently said let it go because he didn't think the baby was going to survive anyway, so why traumatize the mother? But the baby did survive and was badly damaged and could have been saved had the doctor ordered an immediate emergency delivery. So as we see from these cases, there are different kinds of malpractice. In all three of these types...
Most of these cases fall in the category of grumman and zucken?
Yes. Many of these cases would fall into the category of grumman and zucken, of indirect harm, and that's something we'll return to later. But I was going to say that an additional point is that some of these cases, the doctor erred by inaction, by failing to take appropriate action. He should have done something and didn't. Some of these cases involve the doctor or the other professional actually did something wrong. He broke something, or those cases can be very different, partly from a perspective of grumma, Obviously, harm caused by failure to act is less likely to be liable than harm caused by an actual action that caused harm. And that's something we'll discuss later. Also, the question of grumma and so on. We'll return to that later. I'm sorry?
Like the case of the courts, that's a judgment call.
Yes, well...
Sometimes, he's not an oven.
Yes, yes. We will discuss that, too. Everything in medicine is not black and white. It's all a question of balancing relative risk, relative benefit, and so on. And yes, and the truth is, when it comes to medical malpractice, we'll discuss in more detail later, there are several different categories of errors discussed by the postkin. There are... the best, so to speak, is he knew exactly what he was doing. He took a calculated risk. He knew there was a 20% chance the patient can die on the operating table. But this, he felt, this was his best choice under the circumstances. And he rolled the dice, with the patient's consent, of course, hopefully. And they got unlucky. The God decided that the person's time had come, and he died. That's one case. There's another case where he simply makes an error of judgment. He's diagnosing the patient. He's looking at symptoms. He's following the manuals. At the end of the day, medicine is still somewhat of an art, not a science. He has to make a call. He thinks it's X and the appropriate treatment is Y, and it turned out it wasn't X and the appropriate treatment wasn't Y. Then there's the case of actual negligence or of actual incompetence. He needs a syringe of medicine A, and he doesn't read the label carefully, and he picks up the wrong one and puts the wrong thing in. Or Shlomo Zalman Orbach talks about a case where he needs a scalpel. He's supposed to take a sterile scalpel. He's not paying such close attention, and he takes a non-sterile scalpel and causes the patient harm, infection of some sort. That's kind of the worst case. It's negligence. It was not a calculated risk. It was not an error of judgment. It was simply carelessness. We'll discuss again in detail the differences between all these cases as we go. So we'll spend a few minutes, or we'll spend some time on each of these three general categories. What blue-collar malpractice, working with your hands, in general, white-collar malpractice, and medical malpractice. So general malpractice, blue-collar malpractice, is the simplest discussion in terms of the postkim. It is a Gemara in Bava Kamma. Number one on page 3, the Gemara talks about a tabach, a shochet or butcher. In this case, he's a shochet. The shochet is shechting. He's shechting for a customer. The customer brings his animal in, and he shechts the animal. He does something wrong. He shechts improperly, and the animal becomes a nevela, becomes non-kosher instead of kosher, and the customer wants him to pay for the animal. So the Gemara goes back and forth. The Gemara brings different opinions. The halacha follows the view that the halacha is as follows. If he is... Bechinam, if he was doing it gratis, if he was not charging for his services, then he is that if he's bechinam, then it depends. If he's bechinam, he's potter. If it's beschar, he is chayav. If he's getting paid, he is chayav. That's a very simple distinction. It depends whether he's charging or not. Typically, moshochtim, the vast majority of shita today is done. People pay the shochet. Occasionally, there are hobbyists who'll do it for a friend or something for free. But in general, shochtim are paid. So if it's tabach is an uman, he's a professional shochet. Nevertheless, he is. If it's beschar, he's chayef.
What's the logic? If it's a
So what's the logic? So the Gemara compares it to the laws of Shomrim, to the laws of custodians. In the laws of custodians, we have three categories. We have three levels of liability. Shomer Chinam, who's not getting paid for his custodianship, is the least liable. He's only chayav for negligence, for pshia. Shomer Socher and Socher, a paid custodian or a renter, is chayav, has a greater degree of liability. He's chayav even for Gneva and Aveda, for loss and theft. Certainly negligence, but not for onus. A shoel is the highest level of liability, is chayav even for onus, is chayav almost always. The Gemara seems to be saying that we treat the uman as a shomer, as a shomer. If he's a shomer sachar, we're treating the damage as not negligence, but not onus, somewhere in between. And the shomer and the shochet, we treat him like a shomer sachar. If he's we treat him like a shomer. If he's getting paid, he's chayav. If he's not getting paid, he is potter. The Rishonim ask a question. Rishonim ask, why are we looking at this fellow who committed malpractice or potential malpractice? Why are we looking at this at this shochet as a shomer. He's a mazik, adam hamazik. When a person breaks a window, when a person damages someone else's property or person or property, that's called adam hamazik. Discussed at length in Bava Kamma. Adam hamazik has a rule. Adam mu'ad la'olam. There's no requirement for negligence. Adam mu'ad la'olam is similar to the rule in modern law of the idea in modern law of strict liability, of that you're chayev no matter what. There is no requirement for negligence at all. You're chayev even for ones. Adam mu'ad la'olam bein ones bein shogeg bein meiz bein ones meiz and shogeg doesn't matter. Hoshea adam mu'ad la'olam means an adam hamazik is always chayev. So why don't we view the shochet who made the animal treif? Why don't we view him as an adam hamazik who is always chayef? So the Rishonim give a number of different answers. There are four or five different answers in the Rishonim and Achronim. The two or three most widely adopted approaches are Tosus's approach. Tosus says, in number five, that Tosus says, even though Adam Mu'ad La'olam, the Gemara seems to say, Mishnah says, a flat rule, a person is always chayev no matter what, even ba'ones, every rule has an exception. La'olam doesn't literally mean La'olam. It means he's usually chayev, he's often chayev, but not for ones gomer, not in a case where the ones is something that's completely beyond the person's control. A complete ones, even Adam Mazik is pater. Tosus brings many proofs from the Gemara to this effect, one of which is from Arsugya. He says the fact that an Uman is putter if he's not a Shomer Sachar, if he's not getting paid, why not? Adam Mu'ad La'olam. Teretz is for a high level of onus, there is no chiyuv. If you pay him, he's chayav anyway, but for a high level of onus, then he's putter. Tosus compares this to one of the types of onus for which a Shomer Sachar is chayav. And he says, even Adam HaMazik is a Shomer Sachar is chayev more than Shomer Sachar is chayev more than Adam HaMazik. Adam Mu'ad La'olam, Adam HaMazik is only chayev for ordinary onus, not for more extreme onuses. For more extreme onuses, you have to get paid in order to be chayev. The other major approach is that of the Ramban and the Riva. The Ramban and the Riva say that even in a case of where Adam HaMazik would apply, Ramban says there is no exception, Adam Mu'ad La'olam, literally, full stop. There is the Adam Mu'ad La'olam is chayev for all onsim. Nevertheless, the Ramban says when the category of Adam HaMazik only applies where you have no business handling his property at all. You have no relationship with the property owner. You just came in and caused a hezek. Then we say Adam Mu'ad La'olam. If you are authorized to be dealing with his property, you're an uman, you've been paid to do work on it, you rented it, you buy that. If you're using it, if you have some relationship with the owner and the property, then the category of Adam HaMazik is out. We no longer classify you as Adam HaMazik. Then we have to apply the rules of Shomrim, the rules of custodians, of renters, of borrowers, of regular custodians. A whole different framework applies, but Adam Mu'ad La'olam is not applicable once you are an authorized user, once you are authorized to be dealing with his property. And that is the shita of the Ramban. Riva has a variation of that, but that's how they learn the sugya, that Adam Mu'ad La'olam is inapplicable the moment he entered into a relationship, into a contract with the owner. Then we apply the new rules of shomer, of custodians. There are other explanations in the Achronim as well. I don't have them all in the handout, but Avnei Nezer says, similar to the Ramban, but he says that when a person accepts a job, there's an implicit agreement with the owner that he's not going to bill him as an Adam HaMazik, that he's not going to bill him and sue him beyond the parameters of Shomrim. There are other approaches in the Achronim. But in general, the Gemara is looking at the person who commits malpractice, potential malpractice. The Gemara is looking at him more or less as a Shomer, specifically a Shomer Sachar. A shomer, and if he gets paid, he's a shomer sachar. Again, there are different shittas in the Gemara, but we paskin, if he gets paid, he's a shomer sachar, and then he's chayev for a typical case of malpractice, like making an animal treif. If he is not getting paid, then he is potter. Even if he is not getting paid and he's potter, the Gemara still sets forth a requirement that he be a mumcha, that he be an expert. If he is not qualified, if he's not an expert at what he does, then he's chayim. Excuse me. The assumption seems to be that if he's an expert throughout the sugya, the assumption seems to be if he's an expert, we don't know for sure if he was negligent or not. If we know he was grossly negligent, he's always going to be chayim. If we know he's an absolute onus, if we know that for sure, then he's going to be potter. The entire sugya seems to be working with the premise, we don't know for sure how to classify what happened. If he is an uman, if he is an expert, a mumcha, we assume that it was an onus, or at least the level of onus that a shomer chinam is potter for. If he's not a mumcha, if he's not an expert, then we assume it is his fault, and then he's chayav. What is a mumcha? The Gemara doesn't define.
Shouldn't there be shared negligence for the guy
asking
to do it?
See, that's an interesting question. Why are we putting the onus of responsibility on the artisan, on the professional for taking the job and erring if he's not a mumcha, but the customer knew that? Why don't we say the customer engaged his services, then he's accepting that? That's a good question, but it's a good question. I'm not sure how to answer that offhand. But that's what the Gemara says. Sorry? Yeah, there is a question, what if the mumcha misrepresents himself? But assuming the mumcha didn't misrepresent himself, then it's a valid question to ask. Well, why is it his problem, not the customer's?
In the case of a mumcha karma garmi?
Yeah, well, again, we'll discuss questions of grama and garmi as we go a little bit later. Yeah, that's an important question. We'll turn to it soon. Sorry? Right. Right. The fact that he's working brishus absolutely is different. We mentioned that's the shita of the Ramban and the Riva, that because he's working brishus, that's why we don't apply the regular rules of masik. Yeah. So the Maharaj says he's potter if he did it for free. He's potter because he is a mumcha. He's potter if assuming he's a mumcha, he's potter. The Gemara does not define mumcha. The Shach brings from the Marshal that a mumcha is established by having a track record of 3 times doing shechita correctly. Not a very high bar. And it doesn't say also whether it's three out of three, or if you tried 10 or 20 times and got a score of 3 out of 20. It's not discussed very clearly, but the Shach and the Marshal bring this rule that if you've done it 3 times, I guess it's like your driver's test. You take it a few times, you pass once, nobody says, well, you have to do a best of 5. You pass once and you're done. You pass the bar once, you're done. It doesn't matter if you failed 10 times before that. So that's the test. The test is 3 times correctly, and you are considered a mumcha. Difficult, very difficult to know how to apply that in the real world. In modern cases, the Pesachei Choshen, Rav Lau, in his Encyclopedia of Choshen Mishpat, he says, what does that mean in practice? A watchmaker, he says, a launderer, how do you decide mumcha? He says, if it's just because he sets up a sign, a professional laundry doesn't make him a mumcha. You have to have some kind of established record of competence, he says. Does it really mean 3 times? He says, watches have lots of parts. So if you fix one part 3 times, does that mean you're mumcha on other parts? In practice, it's difficult to know. It's difficult to know what exactly a mumcha is. But it's probably a judgment call on the part of a beis din whether someone is considered expert in his field. It's also worth noting that the Imre Bina, Meir Orbach, says, he brings a raya from the sugya, a very important point. He says that even though the Gemara says that a mumche b'chinam, an uman, a professional, an artisan, who's a mumche, is potter b'chinam, he says this is only potter b'dinei adam. That means in court, beis din cannot enforce a chiyuv. B'dinei shemayim, he says, you are chayav. A person has an ethical obligation. It's not just midas chasidus. A person has, God will hold you responsible. In heaven, they expect you to do this. They expect you to pay. It's not enforceable in court. But even a mumcha, a mumcha, the assumption is it might not have been totally his fault, but he still has, he says, a responsibility, since at the end of the day it was his action that caused the problem. At the end of the day, he has a responsibility, b'dinei shamayim, to pay for what he's done. So again, going back to
say that by a shomer, like a shomer that would have a p'tur.
Right,
we
generally do not say that by a shomer, a shomer chinam who it's stolen, a shomer chinam b'gneva. You're not getting paid and it gets stolen.
In this sense, it's veering away from the comparison of Oman Shikilka.
Right. So he's assuming that it's worse because his master was involved. I don't remember. I'd have to go through his whole, the raya he brings, how he proves it, and obviously he's not proving it from Dinei Shomrim. He's obviously introducing other parts of the sugya. But yes, he's assuming that because it wasn't just a shomer's chayav for inaction, for not doing what he's supposed to do. This guy apparently was worse. He actually broke it. He's assuming that in that case there is a chiyuv of dinei shemayim as well. is actually, there's a very interesting machlokas in yeshiva. They say, they bring that for some reason this is not discussed by the regular poskim, but they say, I think, for Baruch Ber and the Chazon Ish is a regular poskim, but they say disagreed about whether the Arba Shomrim, in addition to the levels of negligence, there also are certain gzeiros hakasuv that pater. There are certain carve-outs. The Torah made certain exemptions: a bor, a pit. I'm sorry, not the arba shomrim. The mazik mamish. When a moment of mazik, a person digs a pit, something falls in, or eish, he makes a fire. In those cases, the Torah made certain exceptions: bor, shor v'lo adam, chamar v'lo kalim. There's no chiyah for kalim for property other than animals in a pit. So it's actually machlokas whether it's a chiyuv of b'dinei shemayim or not. The Gemara never says there is. The Gemara says yipater. The Torah says yipater. So they argue whether it's a chiyuv of b'dinei shemayim or not. But here, right here, a shomer, we never find such a thing. A shomer who balavima, right? Balavima might be. I don't remember if the Baruch Ber and the Chazon Ish explicitly discuss balavima or not. But these types of things, where the Torah gives what seems to be a mysterious gzeiros hakasuv, it's not based on the standard of negligence. It's just a gzeiros hakasuv. So the post can argue whether, like common sense says, is a chiyuv b'dinei shemayim or not. But here, Rabbi Orlean's pointing out that on the one hand, a shomer, we never find that if he failed to meet the standard, if he did not exhibit the standard of negligence the Torah mandates, there's no indication anywhere in Shas and Poskim, as far as I know, there's any chiyuv b'dinei shemayim. But here, the Rabbina says, when it comes to the malpractice, when it comes to an artisan, there is. I'm sorry? Yeah, a shomer who shaleach yad, meaning he took it for personal use, right, that's gneva. That's considered a form of theft, a special form of theft that's applicable to custodians. Then he's for sure chayev. Here we're talking about a case, he didn't take it for himself. At worst, he was somehow more negligent, less careful than he should have been. Nevertheless, Imre Bina says... Right. That's what I was quoting. Right, muscle lishmar by Orlean is saying it's not enough. But the next line is Machara the Iker line. Again, the quote is long, right? I don't have the whole quote in these handouts, but I was putting together my notes on this. So I started with about 20 pages. I spend most of my time trying to condense it down to something a little more manageable. So we ended. If anyone who wants can appeal to me afterward for the fuller, more comprehensive. You can get the Arucha versions, or you can get my personal notes. Well, generally in halacha, you become a shomer sachar even if you're being paid for the job, not for even if you're being paid more generally. For let's say, for example, if you give your car to a mechanic or you give your suit to a cleaner, even though you're not paying them for the purpose of custody, you're paying them for the work. But if the work involves handling your property, then implicitly they become. So deducting from the salary becomes a question of hilchos poalim. That'll take us, I think, too far afield. Our question would be, can you sue her for the $3,300? Forget deducting salary. Can you sue her for malpractice? Can either the customer or the boss sue the secretary for you caused our office, you caused the customer, you caused us a $300 loss? Can we, if you were negligent, can we sue you for the, and that the answer might very possibly be yes. If it was some kind of error or negligence, there might very well be... We've had cases in Basin like that. There might very well be liability on the part of the secretary. We'll return also more when there are several people involved, doctors. We'll return to that a little bit later. So, you know, discussing our case of the, let's say, of the mechanic, for example, or the HVAC technician who breaks something while he's doing it, generally he would be paid. Generally, in my experience, auto mechanics and HVAC technicians expect to be paid for their services, and usually you pay them, in which case it is bischar. Bischar, there's a fairly high bar. Even if they're mumche, they're chayef. And even if there's no schar, the chayef is nishamayim, and even if there's... So when it comes to blue-collar malpractice, the halacha is pretty unequivocal that generally, if they broke it, they are going to be chayef. Again, in a case where they argue it wasn't us at all, the part was already broken, we took it out and it cracked, That's what happened in Argentera, I think. The mechanic was arguing that we didn't do anything. It's just that the thing was falling apart anyway when we opened it up. It just disintegrated. It has nothing to do with us. If they didn't really do it, then they wouldn't be chayav. But in a case where the technician, the worker of some sort, actually broke something, even if he's a mumcha, and even if there's no clear evidence of negligence, the halacha seems pretty clear that if he's getting paid, he is going to be chayav. So let's move on to white-collar malpractice. White-collar malpractice is actually the continuation of the Gemara in Bava Kamma. After discussing the tabach, the butcher, and other types of blue-collar professionals who make errors, the Gemara goes on. It discusses mara diner l'shulchani. It discusses someone who the shulchani is a money changer, a banker, different types of services involving money, typically money changing itself. They were experts in coins. So someone is, a business person is considering accepting a particular dinar in payment for goods or repayment of a loan from someone else. He asks the money changer for a professional assessment, is this a good dinar? You know, so they bite them, whatever they do with them, they figure out whether the coin, say we have chemical tests to determine whether something is gold or not. So he asks the money changer for his professional assessment as to whether this dinar is a good dinar or not. Shulchani tells him it is. It turns out it is not. Again, if you can find the person who gave you the bad dinar, and you can obviously try to get your money back from him. But assuming you can't, assuming he skipped town, he doesn't have any more money, whatever it is, assuming there's no option of going back to him, so is the money changer chayav for malpractice? Is he chayav for giving you the bad advice? Here the Gemara does not say anything about schar achinam. It does not discuss whether the money changer is being paid. It does not discuss whether the money changer is being paid for his services. Instead, it gives a different distinction. It depends whether they are super experts, whether they are outstanding experts, like a certain couple of prominent, well-known money changers named Danku v'Iser. If you're experts like that, then you're Pater. Similar to the first Gemara that distinguished between Mumcha and not. But here the Gemara says ordinary Mumcha three times is not enough. Here you need expert like Danku v'Iser. If you're not expert, you are Pater. Tosa says that here, and I'm sorry, if you're not expert, you're Chayev. If you're expert like Danku v'Iser, we assume it was an onus, and then you are Pater. Tosa says, what about Chinam? Why don't we just say that a regular expert is Pater if it's Bechinam, if he's not getting paid? Tosa says, no, if you're not Danku v'Iser, when it comes to money changing, that's nobody should get involved. It's a very fraught and dangerous and tricky profession. Everyone is considered negligent unless they are like Danku v'Iser. If you're not Danku v'Iser, you are always chayav, even if it's bechinam. If you are Danku v'Iser, then there is a machlokes rishonim, whether you are putter, even if it's b'schar or not. The sheet of the Rashba is that the sheet of the Rashba is that the chiluk of Schar and Chinam still applies if you're like Danku v'Iser, that you're Pater. I'm sorry, the Rashba says if you're Danku v'Iser, you're always Pater, even if it was B'schar. Other Rishonim say, the Rambam and most Rishonim say that even if you're Danku v'Iser, if you are B'schar, you're Chayav. Anyway, according to most Rishonim, white-collar malpractice is much more chumer. If you are not an expert like Danku v'Iser, even if you're a normal professional, normal expert, if you're just an ordinary expert, you're Chayav. Even Bechinam, if you are like Danku v'Iser, you're still chayev if it's Bechar, and you're Potter if it is Bechinam.
How do you know if at that level of expertise?
The Gemara doesn't say here exactly. The Gemara didn't say before either what's called Mumcheh. Before we had the Shach and the Marshal, but it's not well defined in the Halacha what's considered the level.
35 years experience or 45 years experience.
Right, it's a good question. It's not clearly defined by the Poskim. As far as I know, I'm not aware of any more concrete discussion of how to define this level of Danku v'Iser. Yes.
You are listening to BensTorah.com.
Specifically with money and coinage, there are now machines that you can actually test these things, and therefore maybe the rules would apply differently. But certain professions that are not necessarily require that much expertise, a barber. I don't know if a barber would be considered to be, and I don't know how much expertise a barber needs, but you know, let's just say that's an example of something that doesn't need as much expertise, maybe because of barber needs.
Yes, that
would be the fillet between, not necessarily what we would call white collar versus blue collar, but rather something that needs a significant, you know,
I agree.
Needs a lot of
yes, I agree.
Something like, you know, other things.
We're about to get to that. We're about to give an example of that. The point being made is that Tosis is speaking specifically of money lending, where we have this extraordinarily high standard, and that's exactly the point. Getting back now to the case of the Chavetzelis Hasharon. In his case, again, what happened was somebody was buying a Sefer Torah. He wanted an assessment of whether it was in good condition, whether it could be repaired at minimal cost. The sofer assured him it was. It turned out the sofer was wrong. He did not give a proper assessment, a proper evaluation. The Sefer Torah required extensive repairs, and it was not cost effective to repair. The question is, can he hold the sofer liable? So the Chavetzelis Hasharon compares the sofer to the money changer. In the case of the money changer, assuming you are an expert for a moment, we said, the Rambam and most Rishonim say that you're still chayev if it was b'schar, if you paid him, you're still chayev. The Rashba has a minority opinion who says that no, that when it comes to money changers, when it comes to white collar professions, white collar professions are more lenient than blue collar professions, he says, and he seems to explain that when you're working with your hands, it's more of an assumption that you made a mistake, that you slipped, that you weren't careful. Rashba assumes, this is debatable, but the Rashba assumes that when it comes to white-collar professions who work with their minds, with their tongue, they talk and they think, it's more plausible to say that you're not negligent at all, assuming you reach the proper standard of expertise. We are less quick to say that you were negligent. And the Rashba says, therefore, that if you are an expert, like Danku V'Isser, you are potter even b'schar. Now, the question is, as you said, does that require the level of Danku? Does that require the outstanding level of Danku V'Isser, like you're a world famous expert on the top of the profession? Says the Chavetzelis Hasharon, no, it does not. He says that is only required when it comes to money changing, as you were saying, because that's an exceptionally tricky and fraught profession. It's very easy to make mistakes. There, only really great experts have any business practicing. When it comes to things like Sofrim, when it comes to ordinary professions, again, he doesn't define exactly each profession, how to look at it, but in his case, the case of a Sofer, he says that does not require the same level of acuity, the same level, as long as you're a reasonably competent expert and you made an honest mistake, you would be potter. Even though according to most Rishonim, the Rambam and most Rishonim, even an expert, even Danku V'Isser, are chayev if there was schar, just like the butcher, the tabach we said, if there's schar, you're chayev. However, the Rashba Shita is that even if there's schar involved, as long as you're an expert, you're putter, and you don't need to be an expert like Danku V'Isser. Therefore, the Chavetzelis Hasharon concludes that at least Ladina, at least the sofer is the muksuk, he says, you want to force him to pay, he's the muksuk, he says, the muksuk for El Haraya, the sofer can say that we'll follow the Shita of the Rashba, that even if it's schar, when it comes to white-collar crime, when it comes to white-collar malpractice, there is no liability. I will assume that that's not limited to Danku V'Isser. And therefore, the Chavetzelis Hasharon, he admits it's not a slam dunk, he admits it's a chiddush, but he says his inclination is that we cannot hold the sofer liable in that case because of this fundamental distinction between white-collar and white-collar and blue-collar malpractice. When it comes to white-collar malpractice, the Iker Lalacha is, he says, that even if there's schar, you're putter, and even if you're not an expert on the level of Danku V'Isser, as long as you are a garden variety expert, a standard expert, you are still putter. Yes, sir.
You can say also that the husband should start with finding
pleasure if he makes a mistake. Right. Right. The reason Danku V'Isser, the reason the people who are at the top of their profession have nothing left to learn, the reason they are putter is because we assume it's an onus. Again, the Gemara is talking about cases where it isn't inherently obvious whether the mistake should be considered onus or pshia. And in both cases, in the case of the blue-collar cases like the tabach and the case of the white-collar cases like the shulchani, we're trying to make assumptions about whether it should be considered an onus or a pshia, based on how much of an expert they were. The first Gemara, the Tabach, says, if he's a mumcha, we assume he's an onus, and if he's not a mumcha, we assume he's not an onus. The second Gemara says, if it's Ein Tzarich L'Slamed Yosef, if he's on the level of Danku V'Isser, we assume it's an onus, right? And the Chavetzelis Hasharon just says that you only need that level of expertise in money changing. When it comes to other types of white collar cases, you don't need that. And therefore, even if there was chayr, according to the Rashba, you'd be potter.
If a safer is such an expert, how can you make a mistake that leaves him more work?
Right. So the point you're making is that the argument cuts both ways. On the one hand, if we assume he's really an expert, that we can assume it was something, an act of God, so to speak, something that was beyond his control. Other, we can assume that maybe he wasn't such an expert.
If he did the job and looked, it would see in his extensive repair.
Yeah.
And he missed it.
Yes, I don't know. I don't have any experience with safras. I don't know. That's an interesting point. Maybe he sampled it. Yeah, so it's a good question. I agree. One could argue the other way, that the fact that you missed something that should have been obvious may itself lead us to question your. It's a good point, but that's the halacha as established by the Gemara. Right, so that's a standard doctrine in Choshen Mishpat called Kimli. The Gemara says a principle in a few places, Ein Holchel Moen Achar Rov, that unlike Issur Heter, unlike Arachayim and Yeridea, where we typically follow Rov, in many cases we follow Rov, when it comes to Choshen Mishpat, the Gemara says, Ein Holchel Moen Achar Rov, that we don't follow the majority. Based on that, the Maram of Rattenberg, and later the Marik, established a principle that applies to Rov Poskim. Even though in other areas of Halacha we follow Rov Poskim, in Choshen Mishpat we generally do not follow Rov Poskim. If the Muchzuk, the person in possession, has at least a minority opinion on his side, he can say, Kimli, I hold like that, and Beis Din can't force him to be Motzi Mamon based on the opinion of Rov Poskim. There is some debate about whether Lassi Deshemayim he has a Chiyav or not, Pashtus he does not. But that's the way things work in Choshen Mishpat. Again, it's much more complicated than that. That Sfardim tend to go more with that approach, Ashkenazim less so. But in general, all poskim agree that there are some cases where the minority opinion is so completely rejected. Some say if it's against the Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't count. Some others say if it's overwhelming, if it's not so mistaver. There are a lot of different qualifications to that. But the Chavetz Chaim Sharon acknowledges that it's not so clear if you could say Kimli like the Rashba, but he's inclined to say that you could. The Rashba is a substantial, not rejected, significant enough opinion in this case that he feels that the Sofer could say Kimli. Sofer could say Kimli like the Rashba. So let's turn to medical malpractice now. Medical malpractice is the most complex, really, of all these sugyas, partly because it is not really a sugya at all. Unlike the first two, which are clear sections of Gemara and Bava Kamma, medical malpractice is based on scattered Toseftas and Rishonim, isn't really discussed in the Gemara. And putting together the picture, and also the cases are quite common and quite fraught, then medical malpractice is the most complex and most tricky of all these topics. The discussion begins with a number of Toseftas. There are actually four of them. There are four different Toseftas that discuss a rofe or a mohel or variations of that cause injury or death in the course of doing their work. And the Tosefta says four different things about the halacha of a rofe that makes an error. The first Tosefta says if he has rishus Beis Din, if he was authorized by Beis Din, then he's potter, he's generally potter, not liable for malpractice. Again, that doesn't discuss negligence, not negligence, just says if a rofe who had rishus Beis Din is potter, but if he did yeser min harai lo, if he did more than he should, chayev, a very strange expression. What does it mean he did more than he should? Usually we want our doctors to do everything they can. Well, what does it mean he did more than he should? Shevet Alevi says it means he was completely out of bounds. He treated the wrong limb. He drilled the wrong tooth. He talks about a dentist, but it's not clear what that means.
We're not borrowing the Lashon from Malchus,
right. So the suggestion is Malchus, it says.
We're borrowing the Lashon from.
Maybe.
Right,
the previous part of the Sefer talks about a shliach patient who does more. Yeah, the question is what that means in the context of a rofe. I don't know, but yeah, it is obvious. It's a good point. It is obviously parallel to the case of the father disciplining his son and hits him too many times, or the shliach patient who gives too many lashes. The rofe who does more. The question is what does more mean in the context of a rofe? Unclear. But right, yeah, the language is obviously parallel to the other cases. That's one tosefta. Generally, potter unless it's yosim and aroi, as long as he had rishus beis din. Second tosefta. says if he had Rishus based in, again, he's Potter like the first Tosefta, but here it adds, he's only Potter Medine Adam, Medine Masul Shemayim, even though he's Potter based in Canon 4 Sechiyuv, but he's still Chayav Medine Shemayim. Third Tosefta says, Rofe, Uman, Sharipe Rishus based in, Hareza Gola. If he killed the patient, he has to go to Golas. Meaning, on the one hand, he's Potter. On the other hand, he's clearly at fault. He's Chayav Dina Shemayim. He goes to Golas. He's just not Chayav civilly in Beis Din. Fourth Tosefta says that if a Rofe who was treating Berishus Beis Din, V'hizik, B'shogeg Potter, B'mezid Chayav. That which we said Potter in the first Tosefta is only B'shogeg, B'mezid, he is Chayav. Why? Dipnei Tikkun Olam, the famous Tikkun Olam. What does it mean, Tikkun Olam? Poskim generally understand it means, even B'shogeg, that it's Potter, he's only Potter because of Tikkun Olam. He really deserves to be Chayef. Any Rofe who, putting all these Toseftas together, the Rofe is in practice Potter. If he had Rishus Beis Din, he's Potter B'dini Adam, but he's clearly at fault. He's only Potter because of Tikkun Olam. He's still Chayef B'dini Shemayim. He still has to go to Golas if he killed. So putting all the Toseftas together, assuming they're consistent and without taking them at face value, the Tosefta is assuming that when a Rofe causes injury or death to the patient, we blame him for it. He is Chayav B'dini Shemayim. He has to go to Golas. In practice, civilly in Beis Din, he's Potter B'dini Adam, and that is a Tikkun Olam. Tikkun Olam seems to mean that we don't want to, it's like the people who want medical malpractice tort reform, they're worried that if the penalties and consequences are too great for the physicians, it'll discourage the practice of medicine. Tikkun Olam means that we don't want physicians to be so terrified of practicing, so we indemnify them from liability. What are you saying? I'm sorry, what are you reading? All it says is Shogeg Potter Mezid Chayav. Yeah, it says it to Tikkun Olam on Mezid, but the Poskim, I think, generally assume that Tikkun, at least the Kohanim case of Tikkun Olam, there's actually a discussion in the Gemara.
It's
whether,
too.
What?
It says Rachel.
I know. So when it comes to the Kohanim Pilu B'Mikdash, the Gemara actually has a debate Mezid, whether
what should be Chayav? What is Mezid? What is Mezid?
Sorry?
What does Shogeg mean? What is Mezid?
Yeah, so we'll have to discuss what Shogeg and Mezid means, but in the case of Kohanim Shpigel B'Mikdash, the Gemara discusses whether Tikkun Olam is an explanation for the Chi of Mezid or the Ptur of Shogeg. When it comes to the case of the doctor, it's generally assumed, I think, that the Tikkun Olam is going on the Ptur of Shogeg, that really he should be Chayav for both, Shogeg and Mezid. But because of Tikkun Olam, they exempted him from liability if it was the Shogeg. This is basically how we paskin in the Shulchan Aruch. It says that, first of all, the Shulchan Aruch says, the Shulchan Aruch is based on the Tur. The Tur is based on the Ramban in Taras Adam. The Ramban wrote a small work on the laws of illness, death, mourning, and so on, called Taras Adam. The Tur puts the laws of illness and the beginning of the arc that leads to Avelis. The last section of Shulchan Aruch Yerideya starts from Hilchas Bikur Cholim and Hilchas Rofe, then it goes to Hilchas Goseis, and then Hilchas Kriya and Kvura and Avelis, and so on to the end of Yerideya. So the beginning of that, when the person's still alive, is the laws of medicine. So the Shulchan Aruch first, and the Shulchan Aruch again is based on, and that's how the Ramban organizes it. Kind of, he puts these laws of doctors and then Avelos together. Ramban influenced the Torah influenced the Shulchan Aruch. So the Shulchan Aruch says, following the Ramban, basically, a person should not be engaged in refuah and medicine unless he is a baki. He has to be considered expert, and also there is no greater doctor. We Jews typically like to find the best doctor always. That is a halacha. You're supposed to find the best doctor. In Lokain, if you practice when you're not baki, or if you practice when there's somebody better than you, you are a shofech damim, you are a murderer. The Tzitz Eliezer qualifies. He says, this idea that there's someone better than you, you shouldn't practice, he says, first of all, that only means if the best guy is available. If he's not available, then other guys can practice. Moreover, he says, we're not talking about routine procedures that there's a standard of care, that the diagnosis and treatment is well known, anyone can do it. We're talking about cases where the best doctor will make a big difference. There's reason to believe that a better doctor will make a substantial difference in patient's outcome. In that case, if you treat a patient, even though there's someone else who's more likely to get a better outcome, that's shofech damim, but it doesn't mean the routine day-to-day, again, routine standard care. You go for someone to look at your throat and take a strep culture, you don't need to go to the the greatest living expert on strep. But anyway, in general, in like cancer cases, in these types of serious cases, he says you shouldn't practice if someone better is available, and you shouldn't practice unless you're a bucky. And then the Shulchan Aruch brings the language of the Toseftas. If your Ripei Shalob Rishus is based in, all the Toseftas say you're only potter if you have Rishus based in. If you don't have Rishus based in, Chayev B'Teshlumen, absolutely Chayev, civilly liable and based in, even if you're a bucky. If you have Rishus based in, V'tah V'Hizik, if you do have Rishus based in, and you made a mistake, and you're a Mazik, then you're potter, but only B'dinei Adam, and you're Chayev B'dinei Shemayim, you're still Chayev, even if you had Rishus based in, you're Chayev B'dinei Shemayim, V'mheimish, V'nodlo Sheshagag, and if the patient died, Gola al Yadu, you go to Golas. Shulchan Aruch doesn't normally bring Hilchas Golas, but he does over here. We'll discuss what Tal means in a moment. That's a good important point. So that is what the Shulchan Aruch says. You're potter if you had Rishus based in, and even then you're only potter in the Adam, Yichayev Dinei Shemayim. What does Rishus based in mean? What does Rishus Beis Din mean? So the Beis Hillel says it does not mean a medical degree. The Beis Hillel says that even if you have a medical degree, he says you have what he calls Rishus L'Rapos Me'Rofin Mumchim, you have Rishus from expert physicians, Shekaron Oso B'Lashon Ashkenaz Doctorit, you have a doctorate, nevertheless, you need Rishus Beis Din Yisrael. However, he says, if the community accepts you, that's good enough. And the Tzitz Eliezer, at some length, argues, nobody does this today, he says. No Jewish doctor, no matter how frum, makes a point of going to Beis Din. It's not a service. You can ask Rabbi Belsky if Beis Avad offers this, but in general, it's not a thing Beis Din does today. They don't offer a certification of physicians. And the Sholem Eishiv, Yosef Sholem Eithenstein, actually wonders why. He thinks they really should. He said, Bavonisein HaRabim, unfortunately, we're not so frum, he says. Doctors don't get Rishus Beis Din. But the Sisleyazer says it's not the minug, and the reason is it's justified, he says. Beis Din are not doctors, Beis Din are not experts, he says. The reason the halacha requires Rishus Beis Din is just they're not acting in their capacity as judges, they're acting in their capacity as agents of the community, as a kind of governmental body that just certifies them, he says. So Bizman Azeh, we have other things. We rely on the government certifying doctors, the community itself chooses to accept doctors based on board certification or government licensing and so on. So today he says the role of the Beis Din, it's not based on Beis Din's Chochmas HaTorah. Aside from the Sanhedrin, Beis Din in general were not expert doctors. I am not. I don't think most of my colleagues were either. And in general, we don't require that. He says we require governmental certification, not Beis Din. Aruch HaShulchan already writes this 100 years ago. Aruch HaShulchan writes. He says, the early post can say you need Rishus Beis Din. Ha'idna, he says, you have to be musmach me'am l'mashallah. You have to be certified by the government. Now, the key question, of course, is, what does it mean? The Shulchan Aruch says, what does it mean? It says, imta v'hizik. You made an error and you caused hezek. A number of posts can say, Rishon Mazalman Orbach, Baruch HaShulchan, and a number of posts can say, Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg, seemingly, a number of posts can say that there has to be some level of negligence. If there was nothing, even in hindsight, you did the postmortem, there was nothing you could have done differently. You did your best and there was no error. It's just that medicine is not perfect. It doesn't always work. Sometimes people die. He says in such a case, there's no chiv din shamayim, there's no gullus in such a case. It's common sense. You didn't do anything wrong. What's the problem? There's nothing wrong. So the language of the Aruch HaShulchan is, he says that if you, he says, in Ripei Rishus V'tah, you're Chayiv Dinei Shemayim, if it was Ayidei Hisrashlus, if it was via Hisrashlus, V'lo Iyein Yafeh, then you're Chayiv. If there was negligence, carelessness, you didn't look as carefully as you should have, in Iyein, if you did, Eimo Shem Chet, you did nothing wrong. Mitzvah L'Rapas, it's a mitzvah to do it. He quotes a saying, an aphorism, the Chacham. Some Chacham said, I don't think I ever tracked this down, but he says, the Chacham said, Shigas harofe, kavanas habore. The error of the physician is just God's intention. There's nothing you could have done. There's nothing he did wrong. He says it again about Golas. He says the only time you go to Golas is if there was hisrashlus, if there was some level of negligence, you didn't do enough, you could have done more. But if there wasn't, he says, there's no Golas. The Aruch HaShulchan understands the entire din of medical malpractice is only when we can plausibly interpret the outcome as due to negligence, when there is... when it's just a judgment call, there's no chiyuv at all. Shlomo Zalman Orbach is quoted by the Nishmas Avram, Rabbi Avram Sofer Abraham, is saying the same thing. He says that the error in question, he says, is if you pulled the wrong syringe, the wrong vial of medicine or something, the wrong knife, he says, but an error in diagnosis, you thought about it and you said, this is my best opinion, turned out you were wrong. In hindsight, 2020 hindsight, we should have done something else. No chiyuv at all, he says. There's only when there's some level of carelessness, so you did something that's clearly wrong, you should not have done in hindsight. Even in foresight, you shouldn't have done it. You should have looked more carefully at the labels and so on. But an error of judgment, you did the best you could, there is no liability. Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg makes a similar point. Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg is focused primarily on the question of calculated risk. He says, if the doctor takes a calculated risk, he says, it's not a sure thing, it might go south, and it might kill you, but it's the best chance we have. And patient agrees, they do it, patient dies. There is absolutely no gullus, there's no liability. He says, poskim say, going back hundreds of years to the Shvus Yaakov, the early poskim discuss this question, lechatchila, is it appropriate to take calculated risks like this? And the answer is yes. The answer is a more or less unequivocal yes. Again, obviously, in real world cases, we have to start weighing the details of that calculation. How much risk, how much time does he have without this, and so on. But you know, the poskim discuss classic cases where he has a couple of days to live. If you do the procedure, he might die on the table, and he has a 50% chance of being cured and living for another 20 years. So in those cases, poskim say that we are able to gamble what they call chayisha. Typically, we're able to gamble chayisha, even if normally chayisha we're machal Shabbos to save chayisha. A person only has a couple of days to live, will still be machal Shabbos to save him. But when it comes to chayisha versus chayi olam, the consensus is we will take a gamble with chayisha, even if we might kill him biadayim, if there's a chance of saving him for chayi olam, we do it. So. So yeah, I'm not sure we'll have time to get into that deeply, but I'll see if we can address that briefly in the time we have.
But what does implied consent? In the American law, is if you don't get consent to the patient from the patient to do this procedure, which has a 20% risk, you do it anyway. The 20% bad outcome happens to the doctor.
Right. So that's a good question. Consent in halacha plays much less of a role here. The poskim do not focus on consent. Yes, consent. You know, the modern. Sorry. Right. 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 The Rishonim mentions the consent. Right. So it might matter if there was no consent, but right. It's not the primary. Not the primary focus of their discussion. So again, Rishonim Zalman and the Rishonim Zalman says, I think explicitly that the diagnostic error is like if you look at number 25, which Shlomo Zalman says, when it says in Hamis Gola, you go to Golos, we're not talking about a toes b'shikol adas. That's a diagnostic error. Toes b'shikol adas.
So a radiologist looks at an X-ray and misses a lesion. That's a diagnostic error.
Again, it depends why he missed it. If he missed it because he was running out his golf date, then he gave it a. If he missed it because it's not a perfect. So again, that in practice, a lot of these cases will boil down to some kind of assessment as to whether we view this as he did his best and in his judgment, this is, you know, doctors have to worry about false positives too. They don't want to start treating you for every preemptively for everything that's nothing. So if it was a genuine judgment call, he looked at it, he gave it all the time in the world, he thought about it, he made the best call he could, and he was wrong. That Rav Shlomo Zalman says you're potter. If it's a question of he thought that in 5 minutes he could do it and he really should have spent 15 and he should have looked more carefully and he should have focused more, again, we can debate that. We can debate some of these cases whether they should be viewed at as diagnostic errors or. Rav Shlomo Zalman seems to assume that taking the wrong bottle, the wrong syringe, is by default our premise is that's negligence. Making a diagnostic error, he assumes it's generally not. But yeah, there could be cases of vice versa in both. But there is one sheet, the sheet of the Tzitz Eliezer and the Menachas Yitzchak seem to say otherwise, that they seem to learn that the procedural error is taking the wrong syringe is chayvim b'dinei adam, that's totally chayv, it's not what we're talking about even. We're talking about the error, the Tzitz Eliezer says, we're talking about a we're talking about a Torah B'Shikol Hadas. Right, he says if it was Torah and he thought this was a good medicine, that's the case of the Shulchan Aruch. He seems to say that a Torah B'Shikol Hadas is the case of the Shulchan Aruch, the opposite of Rosh Shlomo Zalman, and that even in that case, you're Chayav Dina Shemayim and you're only Potter because of Tikkun Olam. So it might be a Machlokas, but the clearer position is that of Rav Shlomo Zalman and the Aruch HaShulchan, the Tzitz Eliezer, that the only time we can hold you liable is when there is some level of negligence. The Rav Zalman Nechemia discusses at length the question that we touched on before with secretaries. He discusses what do you do if there, how do we look at it in the case where there's a senior physician who makes a call and gives directions and the actual operation or the actual administering of the medications or the procedure is carried out by nurses or other physicians, junior physicians, which one is chayev? Assuming that the original thing was an error, and an error that involves negligence, let's say, he made the wrong call, and there was some negligence involved, who is going to be chayev? So he says that the physician who made the wrong call is going to be chayev. It's probably even Dina de Garmi, he says. It's the kind of grumma that you're chayev for, even if it's not, even if it's only grumma, you're chayev l'chal apachas b'dinei shamayim. So he certainly has ethical and maybe even practical liability. As to the nurse or the junior physician who carried out the order, he says if they're not competent to make the decision, they're just technicians, they can't even make that call on their own, it's pashut that potter. They were acting under the direction of a senior person. There's nothing wrong. Again, the same principle. There's nothing wrong. There's no malpractice. So even if the nurse killed him by putting in the wrong thing into the IV, she's not qualified to make the decision. She has to follow her superiors. Of course she's potter, he says. If, however, the physician or the nurse is competent to know what she's putting in, it is something that he or she has enough training to know whether it was the right call or not, and he or she could potentially second-guess her superior, then he says there is makom to mechayev. He makes a very interesting analogy. The Gemara talks about when the Beis Din is administering malchus, lashes. So the dayan calls out, counts the numbers, they only up to a certain number, and more than that is dangerous. The person hitting is following the orders. If he realizes they miscounted, they said the same number twice or something, he's supposed to notice. He knows how to count. He might not be the dayan, but he knows how to count. And if he realizes that they just messed up the enumeration, he's supposed to call it. And if he doesn't, he's negligent. So Rav Zalman Nechemia says the same thing about the nurse or the junior physician, that if they are competent to realize what they should or shouldn't do, they should be second-guessing their orders, they should be bringing it up, and if they don't, it can be mechai of them. And in that case, maybe there's less negligence on the part of the superior, because it wasn't Bar Yezekim. But either way, the point is that the superior pashtus is chayev, at least between the shemayim. The junior is going to be potter unless he has enough expertise, enough competence to second-guess his superior. Right. Yeah, in that case, where the doctor, again, unless there's a requirement that the doctor go through a checklist or something, and I don't know the division of labor.
The doctor gives it over to the nurse, but the doctor has the malpractice, so he always come after the doctor.
Yes, again, so I don't know the procedures in the OR. I don't know if we'll see it's his job before closing to visually examine the cavity and make sure that, the details, I'm not a doctor. Let me just finish up, and I'm happy to talk more afterwards. So these are the rules that govern medical malpractice. I just want to close by one last point, one very important point, well, two very important points. One of them is Rabbi Yosef Fleischman, a distinguished Rosh Kol, an expert on Chosh Mishpah in Eretz Yisrael, has a lengthy tshuva on malpractice where he covers all this and more. And he makes a very interesting point that even in a case where you're putter for malpractice, where you're had rishus beis din and you're a mumcha and it was the shikla das and all the conditions are met that you should be potter according to the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Fleischman says a tremendous chiddush. He says you're only potter if you're doing it for free. If the doctor was working for free, if the doctor was charging for his services, then he is chayev. By analogy to the other sugyas of blue and white collar malpractice, where if this, I'm sorry. Right. Right, the Gemara says doctors should be charging, and you only have enough trust and confidence in your doctor right. If he's charging.
If he doesn't charge, then he's not doing a good job.
Yeah, okay. A good point. But Rav Fleischman argues that if you're charging, then you're always chayev, and he makes three arguments to why that is so. His first argument is you have to have rishus based in. The halacha is a doctor is not allowed to charge. The Gemara says, Mani b'chinam afata b'chinam. Anyone doing a mitzvah is not allowed to charge. The post can say, it's explicit in the Shulchan Aruch, a doctor is not allowed to charge for his services. But before you all jump, just give me another 2 minutes, and we'll, the doctor is not allowed to charge, and therefore, he's no rishus based in. By definition, he has no rishus based in if he's charging. Second argument, similar argument, it says you potter mishum tikkun olam. Tikkun olam is Chazal made a takana that to promote an order of the world that they thought was good. You're potter if you're doing what we want you to do. We don't want you to charge. If you're a person who charges, you're not, that's not the tikkun olam that we want. You're chayv. Third argument, he says, the third argument is the one we made before, that in light of the other sugyas of blue and white collar malpractice, you're chayv anytime you charge, and post can compare the doctor, some post can compare the doctor to those cases. To me, this psak is a pela tzuma. We spoke to him about it once. I'm not sure if he stands by this, but it's a pela tzuma to say this. The first two reasons are extremely difficult to say because we know the minhag is from doctor's charge. Post can discuss why. Rav Moshe Feinstein talks about it. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach talks about it. Post can give different reasons, different justifications for why from doctor's charge from patients. There are a variety of reasons. We're not going to get into it right now. But there are reasons for it. You can't claim that all the frum doctors who charge frum patients are all avrayanim, are all doing shaloka din, chas v'shalom. So there are heterim. Teachers of Torah are not supposed to charge. The rebbe of your child isn't supposed to charge. And your mohel is not supposed to charge. And the basin is not supposed to. Lots of people are not supposed to charge. And they do. And there are heterim for it. So to just say that all of the charge is an oversimplification. The third argument that why is it worse than blue and white collar malpractice, general malpractice, where you chayev if you charge, that's a plausibly stronger argument. But again, it flies in the face of hundreds and thousands of years of the halacha. The halacha said, from the Tosefta down to the Shulchan Aruch, down to Shulman, all the poskim said that a doctor's putter if he meets these conditions. They argue about some of the conditions, but they all say putter. To say they're all talking about a doctor who's doing it for free, doctors always charge. As you pointed out, the Gemara says doctors charge, but doctors have always charged. We know that. It's not certainly today. To say that, to make an ukimta that all the poskim were talking about doctors who were performing favors is very, very hard to hear. Okay, one last point, and then I'll be done. One last point is, all this is talking about the halacha al pi the Shulchan Aruch. There are poskim who say that in the modern world, where doctors have to get licensed, and there's a well-known and elaborate system of malpractice that is generally followed, and insurance is involved, there are poskim who argue that a doctor, by entering the profession in the modern world, is committing himself to play by these rules. Mendel Shafran, a very distinguished Dayan Eretz Yisrael, argues this, and the Russia Weiss, in his discussion of malpractice, makes this point, similar points, that certainly if you're suing the insurer, if you're suing not the doctor directly, if you're really going after the insurer, there's certainly grounds to sue in court and to collect from whatever the malpractice gives you, even if it's not in accordance with halacha, meaning if halacha, you'd be pater, but according to the lawyer Chayev, even the doctor himself, Rav Shafran, argues the rules of the road, you play by these rules. The doctor knows that he participates in the system. This is how the system works. Implicitly, when the doctor enters the profession, he's agreeing to be chayev in accordance with whatever the modern malpractice framework is mechayev. That's a tremendous chiddush. Rav Zalman Nechemi Goldberg did not agree. He says, it's one thing to say, you hire a worker, you want to know exactly when the workday starts, at Netachama, at Olas HaShachar, good, you follow the minhag. But to create a whole new chiyuv of a malpractice liability where there was no liability al pi halacha, that is a bridge much too far, Rav Zalman Nechemia says, he doesn't like that. But Rav Shafran says, Rav Shafran is famous for this position in other contexts as well, that when you live in the modern world, you have to be prepared to abide by certain norms and certain rules. Again, the whole topic of Din Mechusadina is well beyond the scope of our talk today. But in general, this is what Rav Shafran held. Even if you don't go that far, though, you have the point of Rav Asher Weiss and Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein and Achuva as well, make the point that if your target is really the insurers, if you're not really going after the doctor, even if you have to name him in the lawsuit, but if your real target is the insurer is not a Jewish company, or the insurer works according to these rules, then there is there's a whole separate question, and any post-Kimar Mekil, to go after the insurer within the malpractice framework and not to be limited to the Shulchan Aruch.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.